My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. We live in a world of complicated relationships. Professionally and personally, these relationships are driven by the traits each of us bring to them and the roles we assume. With disparate approaches to these relationships, problem solving, team building, and progress may be difficult to achieve without a deeper understanding of the part that each of us play. Is there an older, deeper, and simpler form of wisdom we can call upon to better define our roles and succeed in both the workplace and personal life? My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Linda Kohanov, says there is, and it comes from good old-fashioned horse sense. Linda is beloved for her groundbreaking articulation of the way of the horse, an experiential wisdom known to riders for centuries, but little studied or adapted for off-horse use. Linda has used this new model with executive teams at such companies as Nike, Chubb Insurance, and Raytheon. She's the author of The Power of the Herd and the bestseller The Tao of Equus, and speaks and teaches internationally. She established ApponaQuest worldwide to explore the healing potential of working with horses and offers programs on everything from emotional and social intelligence, leadership, stress reduction, and parenting consensus to build mindfulness. Her website is ApponaQuest.com, and she joins me this week to discuss her new book, The Five Roles of a Master Herder, a revolutionary model for socially intelligent leadership. Please welcome to Destination Unlimited, Linda Kohanov. Good evening, Linda.
How are you, Victor?
I'm wonderful, and thank you so much for joining us this evening. I think you have a very important message for our time, and I think there's a lot we can learn from studying horses, as you have. So please share with our listeners your background and how you first developed your relationship with horses.
I always loved horses, but my parents were afraid of them, and so I wasn't in... It wasn't until I was in my 30s that I was able to buy my first horse and start the adventure of a lifetime. I bought my first horse in the Tucson area because you don't need barns for horses here. It's so warm. And I enjoyed the idea at first of getting out and riding into the desert and getting away from the complicated world of humans who were driving me crazy at that moment. But what happened instead was that my horse was showing me areas where I was out of balance and areas where I was depending too much on positional leadership. I had been a program director of a radio station and had done a lot of management of music festivals. And so my position also as a music critic gave me instant respect from people who wanted something from me. And when I was with my horse didn't care what my position was. They didn't care what famous musician I had just interviewed on the way out to the barn. She didn't care about whether I had, you know, cowboy boots that cost $500 or not. It had to do with what people really talk about now as leadership presence. You actually have to have a leadership presence to work with horses. And it has to be very specific. It has to be one that builds trust. So pure intimidation, pure dominance doesn't actually not work with horses, even though some people keep trying it over and over again. And a lot of those people get hurt. But to find that relationship where you were strong, you were assertive, but not aggressive, where you were collaborative, where you could build trust with the horse. My horse over time, and several horses over the years, tuned me into a state where I was brought into balance. And people at home and at work noticed the difference pretty quickly. But because a lot of the shifts that were taking place were in the nonverbal realm of communication, it was hard for me to explain, and I've spent the last 25 years writing books and articles and doing lectures all over the world to start to bring this nonverbal wisdom into words that point to it and also working with horses on the ground to teach people who've never been around a horse before these same amazing balanced leadership techniques.
Now, I'm a city boy. I have always been a city boy. I've been in personal contact with a horse, I believe, once in my life. What are some of the horse-inspired insights you live by in your personal life?
One of the main aspects of working with horses is that they are very powerful animals, but they are not predators. A lot of our animal companions are actually predators, dogs, cats, birds. At the very least, humans are omnivores. So we have the teeth and digestive system of a vegetarian, more or less. But we also have the eyes forward and this ability to focus and plan and stalk that are similar to the ways that predators act. Our culture, since it's a conquest-oriented culture, overemphasizes the predator role. Horses taught me that you can be powerful in a way that I call non-predatory. So they are masters of non-predatory power. They do not need to use predatory power to protect their herd. They can drive off lions and wolves. They tend to use the power of the herd, the collective power of a coordinated, caring, yet also still individualistic group of horses to come together and work together to drive off predators, to make sure everyone's safe, to protect the vulnerable. And so through that, I've learned how to engage power in a completely new way that's actually very ancient.
Now, we talk about the ability of horses and other animals to have nonverbal communication. We talk about certain people who we call animal whisperers. Is animal communication an important part of this work that you've done?
Absolutely. You know, even human communication is primarily nonverbal. Psychologists studied human communication in the 1990s, and they came to the conclusion that only about 10% of the messages we humans send back and forth to each other is in the verbal range. Some of that has to do with vocal tone, but 90% of the messages we send back and forth to each other are nonverbal. And yet, where do we go to study and perfect nonverbal communication? It's actually getting worse because these days, a lot of times, vocal tone is completely out of the picture. We're texting, we're sending emails to each other, we're on Facebook. There's even the verbal tone of your voice is often left out of the picture. And we're losing our ability to engage 100% of the communication potential we have.
Unless you do it in caps. don't talk to me in that caps. Don't talk to me in that sense. I understand what you're saying. So, in animal communication, how does a horse know what you're thinking or feeling?
We're actually getting to the point where we can describe what's happening. Whereas 20 years ago, it all looked like some kind of big mystery, which is when the idea of the horse whisperer or animal whisperers came out, with this idea that these people have some kind of supernatural ability or some extraordinary talent. But animal communication is phenomenally interesting from a scientific point of view now, because what happens is when we're speaking to an animal, we may have learned how to wear a mask of control or confidence when we're actually feeling fearful or angry or uncertain inside. And animals can actually tell the difference between a person who is truly confident and calm and a person who is hiding a different emotion. Because what happens is that unless you're a sociopath, are you a sociopath, Victor?
No, I'm not.
Okay, good. Because I was going to interview you about that. But sociopaths actually have a compromised nervous system where they don't feel strong emotions unless they're in a really extreme state. And so they have a hard time interacting with people at an emotional level. But the average person, even if you're wearing your best poker face, your blood pressure rises, your heart rate rises, and your body tension gets more dramatic, and your breathing also becomes more shallow and fast. And so even if you're saying you're fine, if your blood pressure, heart rate, breathing, and body tension has shifted, the horses are paying attention to that. So they can tell the difference between someone who's truly calm and and confident, and somebody who's hiding another emotion. And so they're constantly reading our nonverbal body language. And these days, you know, they have shown that the human being has, well, all animals really, and even the earth itself, has an electromagnetic field around the body. And this goes out a number of feet away from the body. And they can even, they even have devices now that can show what your heart rate is several feet away from your body. And so horses are picking up on that. Dogs are picking up on that. The thing that bothers animals the most is when somebody's incongruent. And that means you are wearing a mask of one emotion and you're hiding a different emotion. Because studies have shown, and you can see this in a book called Social Intelligence by Daniel Goleman, studies have shown that when a person is suppressing an emotion or hiding an emotion and interacting with a group, not only does that person's blood pressure rise, but it causes the blood pressure of everybody else in the group to rise. And a lot of times we simply are not paying attention to these elements. But the animals are very much paying attention to this because, especially with horses being animals that are preyed upon in nature, they have to pay attention to changes in blood pressure, body language, in order to predict whether a lion is on the prowl, whereupon they'll run, or whether a lion is just eaten a big meal and is just walking through the pasture. They can tell the difference between those two. So they don't always run away from a lion or a wolf. And one of the things that's intensely predatory is that when a lion is on the prowl, they're hiding in the grass. So when you're hiding an emotion, you are actually broadcasting a kind of predatory orientation. And so if you're congruent, they trust you more and they're willing to listen to you more. But if you're incongruent, they're very suspect of you and you're actually making them very nervous because your own blood pressure is rising as a result of that.
Animal communication, a fascinating topic. We're going to talk more about this and also the five aspects, what you call the five roles of a master herder in your new book, with Linda Kohanov after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Alaya, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hello! Join us, Lisa Berry and Michelle Carter, every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for the Mindset Makeover, What's Possible? Get ready to become present, clear and unstuck, and start living fully, led by your heart, while you listen and feel this transformation through vibration of word, sound, and song. You'll open up to what's possible and experience your shift.
I rescued Toast from a shelter in 2011. I knew right then that she was special.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening, Linda Kohanov. She's the author of The Five Roles of a Master Herder, a Revolutionary Model for Socially Intelligent Leadership. Linda, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the natural communication that can take place between humans and animals. And there's an experience that I had, we had briefly discussed it during the break, of making eye contact with a horse once several years ago, and having this profound sense of connection, even though there were no thoughts exchanged at the time. There was this awesome envelopment of energy that I could feel. Is that something that people commonly experience?
Yes, probably more than they expect, which is why working with horses to learn advanced human development skills like leadership, social intelligence, emotional intelligence, parenting, relationship skills, when people come out and work with our horses who are actually chosen for their ability to be interested in humans and to be capable of teaching humans and to be responsive to humans while also remaining safe, through working with horses on the ground in a very, well, very specialized series of activities to teach specific skills, one of the things that happens is they walk away in a state of awe, or they feel blessed by the attention of a horse, or they're learning these skills in a way in which they're seeing that there's a part of themselves that they've been ignoring, and that they can access this part now and remember it and take it back to the human world. So that moving experience you had in just that one moment with a horse is one that actually invigorates and enlivens and inspires people who come for a one-day workshop or a four-day workshop when we do these experiential workshops with horses.
How do horses react, the horses that are good with humans, that are, as you said, the ones that are selected to work with humans, how do horses react when someone who is frightened or sad are near them?
The horses that we choose as teachers are ones who will do a couple of things. If a person is congruent and they're frightened, in other words, if they are frightened and they're not trying to hide it, these horses will come over and comfort the person. If a person is incongruent, they'll simply walk away. And so one of the most dramatic examples I can give you is I also do some work with counselors who bring out trauma survivors to work with horses so they can learn how to become empowered and move forward in their lives. And we had a rape survivor come out, and she went in with one of the horses, and she started to cry about her experience being raped. And the horse looked at her and just kind of went, oh, and walked away. And this was stunning to her because she felt like, well, you know, I guess my tears aren't welcome here. And I said, well, I don't think that's it exactly. I think there might be another emotion underneath that you're comfortable with the crying, but something else is under there. I bet you any money. And she started to talk, and then she started to access the fact that she was immensely angry at having been violated in such a fashion and having her entire life turned upside down as a result. And so she was standing at the fence post and she was pounding her fist on the fence post talking about the anger that she was feeling. And the horse walked right back over and actually curled his neck around her and hugged her while she was pounding on this fence post. And so this is a great example is that, you know, some horses may be a little bit afraid of humans or be more wanting to be with a herd of horses and not care much about humans. But there are some horses that it appears that they're in some sense as interested in humans, or it's with some horses even more interested in humans than other horses. Just like there are some people who love to be with people and other people who are loners and other people who would rather be with animals. You find the same variation among horses.
Let's take that a little step further. You know, equine therapy has been a very successful approach in helping folks with mental illness or addictions, or as you mentioned, PTSD, as well as building relationship skills. How do horses help humans create a new relationship with themselves and also help humans to learn to create better relationships with other humans?
Couple of things. One of them is the situation that I just described, where they actually encourage you and reward you for being congruent so that you're not hiding emotions or suppressing emotions. Some people have been taught to suppress and hide emotions for so long that they don't even know what they're feeling anymore. And it's really hard to use emotions as information if you can't even access them. And horses are also really profound in that they offer an emotionally intelligent way of handling these feelings. Horses don't suppress emotions, and they don't necessarily overly express them over and over either. What they do is they model a 4-point method of emotional agility. They feel the emotion in its purest form, then they get the message behind the emotion. They change something in response to that message, and then they let it go and they go back to grazing, back to enjoying life. And so when people can learn how to model this same emotionally agile way of dealing with their own feelings, their entire lives change. And as it turns out, increasing research shows that there are very specific messages behind the emotions that we consider to be most troubling, because negative emotions, that's kind of a misnomer in a way. They're uncomfortable, but what they are is course-correcting emotions. So if you're feeling fear, the message is to look for a threat in the environment. If you're feeling anger, anger comes up when somebody's pushed your boundaries, violated your boundaries. So the woman who was raped, feeling anger is a natural response because her entire life was changed and she was severely violated. A lot of times people will suppress anger and then it'll pop out sideways to the wrong person when you have the straw that breaks the camel's back experience. But if you're just using anger as a message, the message behind anger is to set a boundary with somebody, claim your space, claim your own sense of safety and well-being in the world. And so one of the things that I've written about, and this is based in part on the work of a woman named Carla McLaren, who has also really gotten deep into the messages behind emotions. In my book, The Power of the Herd, I actually offer definitions for the various emotions that are most troubling to people. And these particular definitions, some are based on the work of Carla McLaren and some are based on research I've done for years of looking at how these emotions affect others in professional situations in particular. So the horses help people access their emotions. If somebody's hiding an emotion, the horse helps you draw out the true emotion. And they also teach you how to become empowered, how to set boundaries, and what a boundary is. A lot of people think of a boundary as a wall, but a boundary is simply the space you need to feel safe, respected, and therefore connected to another being. So when you learn how to set a boundary with a 1,000-pound animal and you see that actually you, rather than leaning back and holding your breath because the horse is too close and pushing you around, that when you claim that space, you can actually lean forward and truly connect with a horse, and that you can set a boundary in such a way that the horse is attracted to you and more respectful and more calm. A lot of people think that if you set a boundary, someone's going to walk away or people are going to go away. And horses will show you to find that middle ground where setting a boundary actually enhances relationship. Also teach you how to be...
Go ahead. No, please go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say at higher levels of equine facilitated learning, you learn how to be assertive without being aggressive. And so we have various formulas for this that teach you also how to take it back to the human world so that you can use your power in a very thoughtful way to motivate somebody who's being resistant, or to get people who are distracted back on track, or to stand up to somebody who's trying to control a situation, or break up fights between people and get people to really come together and negotiate. So these are really important skills that you can learn so efficiently with horses, because once you can do these things with somebody who weighs 1,000 pounds, your 200-pound boss who's giving you a hard time is not so much a big deal anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us a little bit more about someone, if you have a program in your facility, what someone can expect attending a program there.
Our particular program, and we have instructors all over the world through EponaQuest Worldwide who've been trained in these techniques. Our particular program emphasizes skill building, and so we have a variety of skills that build on each other. So one of the first skills is a skill associated with mutual respect and how to set boundaries with the horse, but how to respect the horse's boundaries through the nonverbal cues the horse is giving off. And this changes people's relationships instantly with their spouses, with their children, and definitely with people at work. And you learn different nonverbal cues to help someone feel relaxed and heard, and also nonverbal cues for claiming your own space and then giving somebody immediate positive feedback when they respond in a positive way. So we do mutual respect, and then we do skills related to exploring connection. And then we also work with skills to move a horse around a round pen, which is learning how to use assertiveness and help somebody perform a goal and stay on task in such a way that you're supported and building trust and connection through asking somebody else to do something and perhaps being increasingly assertive to make sure that happens. And then we also learn skills associated with leadership. So assertiveness is more of what we would associate with the dominant role. And leadership is one where you get a horse off lead to follow you voluntarily and to stay with you. And that involves a drawing, inspiring sort of leadership that a lot of people are missing in this culture.
Some of the nonverbal cues that a horse can give, for example, you mentioned pushing. What are the other nonverbal cues that a horse gives?
One of them is related to a phenomenon that you can only talk about in terms of energy and energy fields. And I noticed that your picture on your Skype page has you in the midst of an energy field that somebody was able to photograph. So one of the things that we've learned from working with horses is that horses actually relate to each other using this phenomenon of the energy field as a form of communication. So as you're walking toward a horse at a significant distance, the horse will actually respond when you hit the edge of its energy field. And you can see those nonverbal cues. And if you rock back and sigh at that moment, breathe out deeply and warmly and connect with the horse, a lot of times you can get the horse to come to you from a distance of 30 to 40 feet. You can also engage in certain kinds of breathing at a distance. And if you go to YouTube and you look up my name, Kohanov, K-O-H-A-N-O-V, and the phrase heart breathing, you'll actually see a video of me using this technique with a horse where I'm engaging what's called heart breathing. And you'll see a description of that. And what I'm doing is creating a certain kind of breathing at a distance that literally calls a horse over to me without me having to move a muscle or say a word.
Definitely something that I want to see. We're going to talk more about this after our break. My guest is Linda Kohanov. She's the author of The Five Roles of a Master Herder. Linda, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about your work.
Well, you can get my book at just about any mail order service or bookstore. And definitely on Amazon.com is a common place to go, where you can also see some reviews of the book. And you can also visit my website, which is masterherder.com, or my other website, eponaquest.com, E-P as in Paul, O-N as Nick, A-Q-U-E-S-T.com.
And we'll be back with more of Linda Kohanov and this amazing work with horses after these words from the OM Times Radio Network.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
This is Terry Van Horn, and I want to invite you to join me for my weekly radio show, Healing Light, on OM Times Radio every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Healing Light, we want to bring love, light, and blessings into your world. You can find out more about us at www.healinglightonline.com. Blessings.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening, Linda Kohanov. She's the author of The Five Roles of a Master Herder, a revolutionary model for socially intelligent leadership. Linda, you mentioned your website, eponaquest.com. Who was Epona?
Epona is the Celtic horse goddess. She was recognized by the Romans, actually. And so she's not just associated with protecting horses and riders. She's also associated with abundance and with healing and transformation. And so I thought she would be a great namesake for an organization that helps people really learn how to thrive in life and also move through old patterns and places that need healing into a more expanded view of life through the kind of transformation she represents.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. So what exactly is a master herder?
This whole thing started when I was researching my fourth book, The Power of the Herd, a non-predatory approach to social intelligence, leadership, and innovation. A lot of times when I do research for books, I'm directed down paths I didn't expect. And what happened was I was researching the history of leadership in multiple cultures throughout time. And I found this group, these groups of people who had a really amazing understanding, a richly nuanced understanding of leadership and social intelligence. And these are nomadic pastoralists. They're tribes that migrate with large animals. And you'll see them in all cultures and all religions. The Judeo-Christian religion, in fact, the Judeo-Christian Bible, is based on a group of nomadic pastoralists, the shepherds. And so we've lost a lot of that socially intelligent, richly nuanced understanding of leadership and working together with groups as we become more and more sedentary in our culture. But when I was looking at these nomadic pastoral tribes, I realized that they have to move with these animals and keep them together without the benefit of fences and with very little reliance on restraints. They have to deal with predators and changing climates. They have to protect and nurture the group while keeping these massive, sometimes aggressive animals together. And so to achieve this complex goal, I noticed that they perform five different roles of leadership and social influence. And I came to call them master herders. At first, I was thinking of calling them masterful leaders, but then I realized that one of their most specific insights is that the leader animal in a herd and the dominant animal in a herd are two different animals. And so once I understood that they also engaged three other roles, the nurturer companion, the sentinel, and then the predator, I had to change the word from leader, which is only one aspect of what you're doing here, to herder, H-E-R-D-E-R. A lot of times the word herder connotes images of somebody pushing others around, and usually mindless animals, pushing mindless animals around. But when you actually work with herding animals, if you don't use the right combination of power and trust that's built and very nuanced forms of influencing the group, you can actually scatter these animals and spend hours having to go round them up. So, you know, the word herder is actually connoting a much more sophisticated way of interacting with others than it's normally interpreted today.
Let's talk about each of those roles. What are each of those roles, and how do you define them?
As I said, one of the most interesting insights these cultures have is that they have watched herds of animals that, you know, in some sense don't even really need humans, but they've determined that the leader animal in a herd and the dominant animal in a herd are often two different animals, and that they perform specific functions that lead to the health of the entire community. So the dominant animal is the one that we often mistake as the leader. A dominant animal is an alpha style animal. We've met people who are naturally dominant, and people are really no different. There are naturally dominant people out there. And when they're using that role in its immature form, and by immature, I mean not fully realized and using it with full consciousness in balance with the other roles. So you can be 75 years old and be an immature dominant. Immature dominance tend to push others around and use intimidation as a management tool. One of the interesting things with immature dominant horses and people is that they will attack others for little or no reason throughout the day. This seems inconceivable to the rest of us who are victimized by this. But from a dominant instinctual perspective, this actually causes everybody to be a little off balance. And they feel that they can control others better when everybody's off balance. And so, you know, you can have an immature dominant boss who picks somebody in a business meeting, usually, you know, rather indiscriminately, and gives them a hard time for something or publicly embarrasses them. And they do this all the time throughout the day to different people. So you never have to take this behavior personally. If you see that you're dealing with an immature dominant as a boss, or you can have a child that's an immature dominant, or you can have a friend or a colleague, they will attack you for little or no reason occasionally. And what that does is it knocks you off balance and slightly disempowers you, keeps you a little off task so that then they can take over and bring you in the direction they want to bring you.
Is this what we think of as the bully in society?
Yes. Some people are more subtle about it, though. Mm-hmm. Yes, but a lot of immature dominants are bullies. And so if you have a boss or a colleague who you feel has bullying tendencies, they're probably just somebody who's overemphasizing the dominant role. They're very talented in that role. They could be exceptional if they learned how to use this power appropriately. But a lot of people simply don't understand the instinctual elements of an immature dominant.
Okay. And what about a mature dominant?
A mature dominant uses the driving energy that, you know, sort of can push a herd forward, or in an immature dominant way, push others off food as a power play. Or the dominant role has driving energy and divisive energy, so that they will push others away from food as a way of engaging a power play at dinner time. However, a mature dominant horse will use that divisive energy to break up fights between animals. They'll use the driving energy to drive off predators. They'll also use the driving energy to herd others away from danger. And so if you don't have the capacity to engage the dominant role in its mature form, you can be highly ineffective in groups of people. And so this was a role that I abdicated because I really don't like that role. I'm not naturally talented at it. But what I found was that my entire organization suffered from my inability to use the mature form of that force.
Okay. And what's the leader?
The leader is really more my orientation. And, you know, like the dominant role, it can have a shadow side to it if you overemphasize that role. But the leader in a horse herd is a horse that's attracted to novel situations, to new things. And they have a confidence and a curiosity that's contagious to everyone else. And so when something new occurs in the environment, a lot of times most of the horses will snort at it and then they'll run away from it. And the dominant will step forward. Its natural inclination is to be suspect of anything new. And so they'll herd everybody away from the new thing. An animal that's a natural leader, even though they might be herded for a moment, they'll step out from the group and they'll walk toward the new thing with an appropriate level of caution. And then their confidence is contagious to others who then follow them. Humans who have the leader orientation are interested in new ideas, new procedures, new ways of being in the world, new cultural innovations. Whereas naturally dominant people can sometimes really be suspect of anything new because they know that they have more control in the status quo. So the problem with somebody who is more of a leader is that they tend to be addicted to luring others to follow through inspiration, through focusing on the mission or the goal or the new thing. And in this capacity, if they don't have the other roles to balance them, they can actually be seen as aloof and self-absorbed. They have very little patience for interpersonal difficulties. And they can also become workaholics if they don't have access to the dominant role, because they're not very good at delegating or pushing people toward the goal who are resistant. They just want to inspire and have people follow of their own accord. And not everybody will do that. And sometimes people have interpersonal difficulties, or sometimes people need more support and training to fulfill the goal. And they'll just focus on the goal and the mission obsessively and try to inspire everybody forward. So they can really be quite, they're not so, They're not intimidating like an out-of-control dominant, but they are infuriating for some people who need more support and attention to move forward.
Okay, and then you talk about the sentinel. What's the sentinel?
The sentinel, this is a role that horses trade very well throughout the day. The sentinel stands a little bit apart from the group and watches group dynamics in relation to threats and opportunities in the environment. So when you think of the shepherd guarding his flocks, that's the shepherd in the sentinel role. He wouldn't be in that role all the time, and groups of shepherds would be trading that role because it's really quite an exhausting role. And if you overemphasize this role, you too can be seem aloof because you have to stand away from the group in order to perform the service that's of value in that role. And the problem is that a lot of people abdicate the sentinel role, or we depend on somebody else to engage the sentinel role. So for instance, in modern society, we hand over the sentinel role and the dominant role to law enforcement. They specialize in the sentinel role and the dominant role. But when you have a group like Neighborhood Watch come along, that was actually a group of citizens who learned how to trade and engage the sentinel role to protect neighborhoods. And I use this example in the book that this started out as a way of protecting neighborhoods during the day when people were off at work and there were robberies happening. And they engaged Neighborhood Watch to put people in the sentinel role in a way in which they were trained what to do and how to respond in that situation. But over time, what happened was they reclaimed the original strengths of the sentinel role naturally because they're milling around looking, watching the neighborhood, and they're starting to see that, wow, this place here, there's a bunch of garbage laying over there. We need to get somebody to pick this up. And, oh, look at that abandoned lot across the street. Why don't we turn this into a park? And so those neighborhood watch sentinels began to fulfill the role by looking not just at threats in the environment, but also opportunities in the environment.
And we'll continue with the five roles of a master herder with Linda Kohanov after these words from the OM Times Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hi, this is Sylvia Henderson, intuitive life coach and energy healer. Are you ready to elevate and rise way above your normal? Be sure to listen to my show, Intuitive Transformations, on OM Times Radio, Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. Get the inspiration you need to transform your life.
Searching for a perspective beyond the mainstream? Check it out. Join your hosts, Yelito Pascual and Diana Gold Holland, on Share International Radio for thought-provoking views behind the news. Sundays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, on OM Times Radio. You can also find us at shareontheairradio.org. This may be the message of hope you've been waiting for.
Chris, you're not acting like a grown-up in our relationship.
M2!
There's your comic book collection, the race car bed.
I'm young at heart, but I put money into my 401k every paycheck. I'm taking control over my financial life, and that feels pretty grown-up to me.
Put away a few bucks, feel like a million bucks. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org.
Are those footy pajamas?
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
You don't need to get a second job as a stuntman to save money.
We need a new stuntman!
You just need feedthepig.org. Don't get left behind. Get tips and tools at feedthepig.org. Brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening, Linda Kohanov, author of The Five Roles of a Master Herder. So, Linda, before the break, we talked about three of the roles. We talked about the dominant, we talked about the leader, we talked about the sentinel. Now we have the nurturer companion.
For parental sense, it's a nurturer, but after everybody grows up, this is the one who's the companion to everybody. And even in a professional setting, you really need to have this role to build trust. And they're the ones who keep everyone together. They're the ones who understand how different people need to be supported to do their job well. And if you don't have access to those skills, you can alienate people pretty quickly. And this is a role that's often ignored in the professional world. I use an example of a woman by the name of Melanie who was working at a computer software firm. She was a programmer, and the firm actually brought in a consultant by the name of Greg Reed to deal with two problems, one of which they said was the curmudgeons. These were programmers who, you know, just wanted to be in their own office, and they didn't want to communicate with anybody, and they were kind of cranky if they had to deal with clients and customers. And then the other problem was Melanie. They were really upset about Melanie not being able to meet her goals that they had set for her in terms of programming. And so Greg Reed did some different measurements and studies of the organization and found that when the average person went on vacation, there was about a 5% drop in productivity across the board. And when Melanie went on vacation, there was a 37% drop in productivity.
Wow.
So what happened was they realized that Melanie didn't have time to meet her goals because she didn't have time to do her job because she was performing another job that turned out to be more valuable. She was acting as the great connector of the company. And these great connectors are fluent in the nurturer companion role. And so when somebody new came in, she would help them get oriented as to who they went to and what they needed. And if somebody had a problem, they would go to Melanie because Melanie knew who to go to. And so all day long, she's being interrupted to do her programming job and meet her goals in that area because she's doing this other job that had they fired her because they were about ready to, they would have had a 37% drop in productivity from a woman who knew a bunch of information that they would not be able to hire anybody else to figure that out.
Wow.
So a lot of times nurturer companions in the professional world are devalued, but they are essential to success.
And the final role is a predator. What is the predator?
The predator role is the one that keeps life in balance with the available resources. So just as in nature, it's important to have lions keep the wildebeests and zebras and horses in balance, the predator role is useful if you have to, let's say the economy changes and you have to downsize. But if you're using the predator role thoughtfully, you would downsize in a thoughtful way rather than just make some kind of, you know, knee-jerk decision. The predator role could be highly destructive. You should never use the predator role in anger. It deserves thoughtfulness and reflection, but it is essential. And so if you have staff members that you've worked with for a long period of time and given them a number of trainings and support and chances to change unproductive behavior and they're not fitting in and they're not doing the work they need to do, the predator is the one that lets them go. The other four roles, even the dominant role, should always be used in their non-predatory forms. So one of the things that horses teach is that they don't need the predator form of power to protect the herd. They can drive off lions and wolves. Horses also, if they're driving off a predator, once the predator backs off, they go back to grazing. So they don't hunt the predator down and kill him. You know, so this idea of killing the competition, crushing the competition. These are predatory metaphors of overusing that role.
You offer an assessment tool to help determine which roles someone is currently overemphasizing and which roles they may be ignoring. How does that tool work?
You can take it at the back of the book of the five roles of a master herder. You can also go on to the master herder website and take that for free. and it will automatically calculate the results for you. But it actually is designed to measure the possibility of balance of roles too, so that you'll see that when you take the test, it's 14 questions about various scenarios in professional situations. So this is a professional assessment, and it asks you how you would react to a different scenario, and each one of the answers that's a kind of way of reacting represents the use of a certain role. And so you can actually give the same numerical value to two roles that you might combine or you might be equally likely to use in that scenario. So it's not one where you rank possibilities. This one you can actually give, you can actually say three of these I would absolutely not use and give them the same low rating. And then two of them I would actually probably combine or I'm equally likely to use them. You might give them the same high ranking. And so this assessment allows you to see areas where you might combine certain roles or have a tendency, as you were saying, Victor, and I relate to this too, that you tend to be oriented to the leader role and the nurturer companion role.
Yes.
So on this professional assessment, you may very well show up with scores in those two areas that are very close to each other. And then you may find that you hardly ever use the dominant role. You might find that's one of the lower scores, as well as the predator role might be very low.
Yes.
And then the sentinel may be somewhere in between. The idea is that when you take this assessment, any area where you score unusually high, that's an area where you have an absolute talent. You've got all the mature aspects of that role. However, because you're overemphasizing it, that role, you might have some dysfunctional behaviors that are occurring because of your overuse of the role. And so that's where the Master Herder book helps you to understand more which are the strengths you want to keep and which are the dysfunctions you may have that you want to fade out of by learning how to use the other roles too.
I have to admit, I did the assessment, and as you mentioned, the leadership and the nurturer companion were my high scores. I find it very difficult to deal with people who are not performing, and I really find it hard to discipline and to terminate. It's against my nature to do that. I'll do everything I can to bring that person up before letting them go.
Let me tell you how you can use these roles very strategically to get over that habit, because I had the same one. And it really hurt my organization because I didn't break up fights soon enough. And then people would say things to each other they couldn't take back and factions would be created, you know. And so you can think of using the roles as a crescendo of power. And by crescendo, it's a musical term. It means that you gradually get louder without backing off. And so if you use the roles as a crescendo, you would start off with a nurturer companion conversation with somebody who is being disruptive or not functioning well. And you would find out, you would connect with them and you would find out what's going on in their life, what's going on at work, what kind of support or training do they need in order to fulfill this. And with somebody who's acting out, the kind of training they may need is social and emotional intelligence skills. So you might get them some of that training. Then the next level of the crescendo is to have a sentinel conversation with them. And a sentinel conversation is where you tell them how their behavior is affecting the group and how that's affecting the group's ability to serve the larger organization and ultimately the larger organization's ability to serve the clients. That's a sentinel conversation. If the person isn't moving forward, you'd very quickly after that give them more of a leadership conversation, which is, let me very clearly show you the mission and the vision of this company as we're moving forward. And let me inspire you to be a part of this organization. And let me show you what opportunities you have for future promotion or engagement in this company if you can move through this challenge. If that's not working, then you go to the dominant role. And the dominant is more directive, and it's the one that starts to create consequences for dysfunctional behavior. And so you might have two or three dominant conversations. And the dominant conversation doesn't have to be angry and mean and intimidating. It's simply, I need you to get on track now. You've had these chances. If you don't do this by this date, this is the consequence. And then the person comes back in, you give them the consequence and let them know what the consequence is the next time if they don't engage in the right direction. And the last thing the dominant does is tell them the predator is coming in next. And so after all of these crescendo of interventions you've created, you let them know that, well, the next time you're in here, it's going to be time for you to go. And so then if they come in, they already know what's happening. You don't have to be mad. You don't have to shame them. All you have to do is say, you know why you're here now. And obviously you're not the right fit for this company. And I wish you all the best, but it's time to pack up your things and leave.
Yep. The hardest thing to say. Linda, what message would you like readers to take away from the five roles of a master herder?
In our culture, we're taught to over-specialize, and that works well in technical aspects of our work and our life. But in terms of emotional and social intelligence skills, if we over-specialize, we get this dysfunctional behavior in these roles. And so we need to think more about these five roles as not something that we are, like, I am a dominant or I am a leader, instead of I need to learn how to use the dominant role, the leader role, the nurturer role, similar to I need to know how to read, I know how to write, I need to know how to balance my checkbook, I need to drive a car, and I need to work a computer. I need to be reasonably good at all of those things to function well. While some people may be race car drivers, the average person needs to drive. While some people may be mathematical geniuses, the average person needs to know how to add and subtract and balance their checkbook. So I think we really need to learn how to use all of these skills more in that spirit.
Absolutely. My guest, Linda Kohanov. She's the author of The Five Roles of a Master Herder. Linda, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about your work.
I have two websites. One website, masterherder.com, is the one where you can take the professional assessment, and you can also look at different workshops that are related to leadership in this capacity. And my other website, EponaQuest.com, that's E-P as in Paul, O-N as in Nick, A-Q-U-E-S-T.com, has a larger variety of workshops that exercise creativity and, you know, some aspects of spirituality and some more in-depth understanding of energy work and nonverbal communication, as well as the leadership aspects. And the book, The Five Roles of a Master Herder, is available on most mail order places, definitely on Amazon.com, and you can also order it through my publisher, New World Library.
Linda, thank you so much for joining us this evening. This is a fascinating topic, and I think in our world, especially in our political leadership, they could stand to read your book and learn a few lessons from the horses.
I wish they would.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor, the voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.